This is Fresh Air. The healthcare debate has been dominated by the concerns of the middle class. My guest, Lori K. Abraham, is a journalist who's written extensively about healthcare. Her new book is about the predicament of the poor. For 1 year, she followed an uninsured family from one of Chicago's poorest neighborhoods as they tried to work their way through the healthcare system. Abraham's new book about the family is called Mama Might Be Better Off Dead, The Failure of Healthcare in Urban America. The family she followed had many serious medical problems.
Well, the grandmother in the family was 69 when I met her, and she had had diabetes and high blood pressure most of her life. But she hadn't been getting very good basic primary care, and she, when I met her, had already lost one leg to the disease and was in danger of losing the other to diabetes. Her granddaughter took care of her in their home. And her granddaughter was healthy, but her husband had lost his kidneys at age 27 and was on dialysis and received a transplant while I was working on the book. Also, the granddaughter's father had suffered a stroke from high blood pressure, uncontrolled high blood pressure, at age 48, and he was partially paralyzed. So, and there were three children that, you know, this young woman, 30 years old, was trying to take care of at the same time as she took care of all these sick people.
Do you think that this is a particularly unfortunate family, or do you think that that the poor have many more medical problems than the middle class do?
Well, I worried about that both people would think that and that they were truly unusual. But again and again, I heard from doctors in the neighborhood, you know, who said, you would not believe the level of illness in one family.
Now, the grandmother had diabetes. She eventually had both legs amputated. Now, you say that if she'd gotten preventive care, the amputations could have been prevented.
Right. Well, one of the big problems for her was transportation, and she was covered by Medicare, which is the health insurance program for the elderly, but they don't cover medication, transportation, extra ancillary services that people need, especially who are poor. And she would intermittently be eligible for the state federal program Medicaid, and that covers transportation, but she wasn't eligible for that enough because she had to spend almost half of her $600 monthly income to be eligible for that. It was sort of like a deductible for Medicaid. So she wouldn't make it to the doctor a lot. And once she got her leg amputated, she couldn't manage the bus anymore. And they really needed this special transportation, which cost $70 for a round-trip ride. It was a 2-mile round-trip ride. It was kind of absurd. So that was something she missed. Also, the family would run out of medication, and Jackie, her granddaughter, was real aware of this when her grandmother's medication was getting low. So she would hold back on her pills if a doctor or a home nurse had said her grandmother's pressure was good that day. Well, you know, that's the way you get high blood pressure, is not taking your medication.
After the amputations, she needed adult diapers, but she couldn't afford them, and Medicare wouldn't pay for them.
Right. To Medicare, that's considered, as an official at the Healthcare Financing Administration told me, that's a convenience.
As opposed to a medical necessity?
Right. That's how they sort of classified medically necessary or a convenience item. Ironically, though, they cover things like catheters, which are a more high-tech way of dealing with incontinence and more expensive. But, you know, because the bed pads, the diapers are sort of, they're not medical enough. Medicare, I mean, that's one of the problems in our medical system. It's still so geared toward acute care. And that's something that, to an extent, health reform addresses, or at least there's lots of rhetoric about providing more preventative basic care. But I don't really see it going far enough with that.
Your calculation is about $120,000 was spent on the last 6 months of her life medically. But you think that had Medicare paid $100 worth of medicine each month before that happened, the amputations would have been unnecessary.
Yeah, there's a good chance of that. Or if she would have been able to get transportation to the doctor's office. Because they couldn't get transportation, they would often end up just going to the emergency room. And Jackie, her granddaughter, had figured out that ambulances won't come if you say, you know, that your grandmother has a bad foot. Ambulances will come, and they're free, if you say, my grandmother had a fall and her stomach is paining her, or something like that. So she had sort of figured out how to work the system. Ambulances are a very expensive form of transportation. But what they do is they'd miss any appointments they made, call an ambulance, manage to get one out there, and end up in the emergency room. But emergency rooms just don't have any follow-through and continuity. That's not why they're there. So, for example, Mrs. Jackson went in once, and she was essentially overdosing on a blood-thinning drug, which was being used to try to keep the blood flowing to her other leg. And the tests there at the hospital showed that, but somehow that information was never relayed back to the family. And she showed up in the hospital a week later, you know, her nose was bleeding, she OD'd on the drug and spent a week in the hospital recovering from that. And that could have been, that kind of thing just wouldn't happen to those of us in the middle class with health insurance and who have some kind of regular doctor or health plan.
My guest is journalist Lori K. Abraham. She's the author of the new book, Mama Might Be Better Off Dead, The Failure of Healthcare in Urban America. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Journalist Lori K. Abraham is my guest. Let's move on to another member of this family, the family that you studied for your new book, Mama Might Be Better Off Dead, The Failure of Healthcare in Urban America. The husband in the family had mm-hmm. kidney disease, a progressive form of kidney disease, and he mm-hmm. ended up getting a kidney transplant. How aware of he was the medical problem he had, and how far it had progressed before he really started seeking treatment for it?
Well, he was 27 when he was at a job physical. He was going to work in the kitchen at a hospital, and they told him he had this disease that's a kind of progressive scarring of the kidneys. 4 years later, he got no medical care for that for 4 years, and then he showed up in the emergency room of Cook County Hospital, which is a public hospital here, with his kidneys working about 5% of their capacity. And what he told the social worker at Cook County was, number one, I didn't have health insurance. And number two, he said, I was thinking whatever I had would clear up on its own. I didn't know it would lead to kidney failure. He didn't seem to understand. I mean, that is something I found again and again, that doctors, nurses, even social workers had difficulty communicating to patients about what was going on with their own bodies. And that happens for middle-class people, too, but it's just a bigger gap.
Well, another thing that you thought was, some of the members of this family had an attitude of things will run their course, you know, nature mm-hmm. will take its course, and that you think that there needs to be research on how fatalism affects how people who are poor communicate with their doctors.
I think there needs to be research or at least recognition of that. And, I mean, I cite a study in the book where studies have been done to show that people who the doctors communicate best with patients who are like them. And since most doctors are white men, more and more women, they communicate best with white educated men. But the people who they really need to spend time with are people like this family, poor patients who have lots of reasons not to necessarily follow doctors' orders. I talked to a physician in the neighborhood, for example, who was telling me he was getting really frustrated with a woman who kept coming in with allergies caused by our cats. And he's saying, you've got to get rid of those cats. And finally, she said to him, after several appointments, she said, I can't get rid of the cats. They kill the rats, and I don't want them picking at my kids. So it's this kind of stuff that people are really reluctant to talk about. I mean, some of the things that I wrote about in this book, the family now, is they don't like it. They don't like that I wrote that there were roaches in their house, for example. It's not, and who would like it? But this is some of this information is really important to people who are trying to get people better.
Well, a lot of people who don't have health insurance and can't afford to pay for a doctor out of their pockets end up in emergency rooms. Do you want to explain why that happens so much?
Well, the first thing is, emergency room is the only place that doesn't turn you away. Emergency rooms are required by law to take patients. And I think in addition to that, there's other places may take you, but there is a, you tell a clerk at a private doctor's office that you don't have insurance, there's a real resistance. You know, she may look at you with great skepticism and may go back in the back and talk it over with some people and that kind of thing. There, you know, the emergency room is sort of, they are used to that kind of situation and they accept you. No one looks at you strangely. I also think that with so many people using ambulances for transportation, that if you tell the ambulance dispatcher that, hey, my grandmother's chest is bothering her, you've got to continue that story when you get to the hospital. And, you know, chest pain goes to the emergency room. So, I mean, there's a lot of reasons. And I think even if better primary care were available in these neighborhoods, it would take a little time to break people out of the habit because they've come to depend on them. And that's not such a bad thing for them right now.
In your book, you write that the quality of private care in poor neighborhoods isn't always very good. That first of all, there aren't always a lot of doctors around.
Right.
And that sometimes the doctors that are there aren't very good doctors. Mm. Why would doctors who aren't very good doctors sometimes end up in poor neighborhoods?
Because they are not good enough to practice anywhere else, and Medicaid, which is the health insurance program for the poor, pays very, very low. So they will come to this neighborhood because they can't get a better paying job in a nicer area or a more affluent area, and they'll try to see lots and lots of patients to make up for the fact that they're getting so low per patient. I mean, what happened with this family is they were seeing a doctor who got disciplined by the Illinois Department of Public Aid, which runs Medicaid. He was disciplined and required to take education and put on kind of a probation period because he wasn't doing things like giving immunizations to kids. And here Jackie is, this 30-year-old mother. She's taking her three kids there, having no idea that this is what was going on. The Department of Public Aid certainly doesn't notify patients when they take some disciplinary action.
I think it's fair to say that the main conclusion of your book is that the poor don't get very good health care in spite of Medicare and Medicaid. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've been studying the Clinton health care proposal. Do you think that that would make a difference?
I think that there are two things I really like about the Clinton proposal. The first, everyone says they like, and that is that it provides universal insurance. The second part is that it does bring Medicaid rates, the health insurance program for the poor, it brings Medicaid rates up to the market, about market level, so they'll be more comparable with what commercial insurers have been paying. The thing that makes me nervous about the plan is that it's still a market-driven plan. And the big, who would want to market to a fam, what insurer in their right mind would want to market to a family like this one with so many people with chronic diseases? And the easiest way for insurers to preserve their profit margin is to have a pool of patients that are very low risk for disease. And I think that insurers are still going to be able to do this. Insurers are more be like health plans. They'll be more like networks of providers, hospitals, clinics. Insurers can just put hospitals, clinics, doctor's offices in places that poor people don't live. And that's what we do now. So that's not a big switch. They can also market their plan to, you know, young men who like workouts and health food rather than poor families like this one. And the Clintons' plan tries to regulate away a lot of that, but I just think that that's going to be real difficult to do. I mean, there's lots of ways that I worry that the poor are going to be ghettoized into a few low-quality health plans, even under this system. So it will sort of may bolster or at least maintain the two-tiered system we have now.
Lori K. Abraham. She's the author of Mama Might Be Better Off Dead, The Failure of Healthcare in Urban America. This is Fresh Air.